Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Good evening and welcome to Encouragementology. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. We are going to be talking about trusting yourself, listening to your inner voice. Are you very trusting? Would you say you have good intuition? Are you able to sense the right path over the wrong? Are you great with advice for everyone else besides yourself? I know you're shaking your head. Why is it so hard to take our own advice, trust our own intuition, or listen to our own inner voice? Is it because most of the time we ignore those feelings and push forward in a direction that isn't quite right? We get burned time and time again, and then we feel incapable of managing our own lives successfully. Okay, that may seem a bit dramatic, or you could completely identify with those feelings. Either way, we are going to explore that topic tonight and hopefully come up with some new ideas to put us back in charge. Sound good? Okay, let's take it back, way back. You know, I like to start at the root of it all if we can. We start our learning and forming our opinions and ideas with each challenge our parents or caregivers put in front of us. They themselves are a big source of how we're molded and what we think. As little sponges, we soaked up everything. Then, as we explored life, we started to develop some independence, some courage, some curiosity. We started to form our own points of view, intuition, but still grossly impacted by our foundation and what we believe to be true about ourselves and about the world around us. Most children have a heightened sense of intuition. It becomes learned from that 9-to-4 schooling at age 5 and onward. I found an interesting explanation of this stage and how it differs through childhood all the way through adulthood. And this is from Rita Noemi. She is the founder of One Heart Path Integrative Healing and Living Practice. She's certified in just about everything having to do with natural healing, and her philosophy is based on wisdom practices from around the world. She said, "What I've learned over the last several years was spending more and more time working with children that have not had significant trauma and comparing it with those who have had trauma is that nature has a way of always bringing us back to intuition. And that adults with PTSD that I work with have intuition rooted in fear and disconnect, while children have intuition rooted at the heart. In a way, it's our nature to have a heightened sense of knowing and sensitivity to others. And we either make that choice to meet it or we drown it in distraction." If you observe children over time, you will find that their intuition is their natural heart resonance. There's nothing separating from them. They feel everything. They see, they hear it all. As they get older, the conflict between the heart and the mind starts rolling in with society, social, and family dynamics. In working with people with PTSD, teaching them to feel their hearts again has always worked. The heart is formed in the embryo, even before the brain, with its own electric field, its own rhythm, its own way of governing our senses and their interpretations and projections, even before the mind can grab at them. If we honor and acknowledge that intuition, it's our birthright. And that sensitivity is a heightened capacity for compassion and the deep need for love, to be seen and to be heard. If we could do that, we could heal many, including ourselves. Intuition is something we all have, the ability to see and feel ahead without knowing. Intuition is the mouthpiece of the heart. If you can remember that your sense of knowing comes from the heart and does not have to do with fear, you can prevent much suffering. So what's the difference between instinct and intuition? Have you thought about that? Do you get that feeling? Something comes over you, a physical feeling or a mental feeling? Instinct is our innate inclination toward a particular behavior, as opposed to a learned response. It's innate. A gut feeling or a hunch is a sensation that appears quickly in the consciousness, noticeable enough to be acted on if one chooses to. And this is without us being fully aware of the underlying reasons of its occurrence. It just happens. It just grabs your gut. You just get that gut feeling. You know what that's like? Intuition is a process that gives us the ability to know something directly without analytic reasoning. How about that? Just comes to you without having to have a reason, just part of the mind. It's also between instinct and reason is intuition. Have you stopped there and trusted that? So how can we get back to the heart, pushing out the lingering effects of trauma or hushing the limiting beliefs from our childhood? Do you take the time to feel and think and trust? In this fast-paced world, when you can get an answer just like that, you don't even have to think about it. You can just Google everything. Does that prevent you from just sitting, taking in your own thoughts, and really analyzing those? Are you too quick to have someone else tell you what to do? Do you think and trust yourself? My gut is telling me no. You feel a pull, you get a thought, and you immediately dismiss it. Yeah, crazy idea, self-sabotage, silly notion, overly judgmental, super naive, whatever you have to tell yourself to push forward without the regard to this feeling. Maybe it's fear. Fear from the things you've come to believe or adopted as fact during your formative years. You aren't really sure if it is fact. You never challenged it as such. But, it's always been like that. That's what I was told. I'm going to stick with that. Are you thinking of a few of those right now? Those limiting beliefs that might be preventing you from trusting yourself? You're lazy. You have horrible taste in men or women. You aren't smart enough. You're not worldly enough. You've made too many bad choices. You're selfish. As the years go by, those labels, whether true or not, become sewn into the fabric of our being. They become part of our core, the vocabulary we use to discuss ourselves and the thoughts we hold internally about ourselves. Mine was, I talk too much. Now, that one actually is true, but I heard that early on. Kendall, sit back, be quiet, you talk too much. Even my first grade teacher wrote it on my report card. She talks more than I do, and I teach the class. I was always the loudest and the last one talking, and as a result, I always got in trouble. I might have not started it, but I was always the last one and the loudest. Every year I started school, I thought, this is the year. I'm going to get A's in conduct, and I'm going to be really reserved. I used to say it to my best friend because she was reserved. I always wanted to be like that. And I thought, oh, this year I'm going to keep quiet, and I'm going to do everything right. Well, you know that didn't last but a week. So it's always been a joke. If my children got in trouble for talking too much, they would say, well, you come by it honestly. That was your mom. But as a result, I never met a stranger. I have no fear approaching people. I think everyone likes me. And now I use my gift of gab for the positive. I'm no longer getting those bad marks in conduct. I'm actually celebrated for talking a lot, but I channel it in a positive way. So how could you reframe your limiting beliefs to be positive versus negative? Well, let's look at some of them. Let's go back. You're lazy. Well, maybe you're not lazy. Maybe you take your time and you evaluate all the information before making a hasty decision. Maybe you move at a slower pace, building in time to enjoy life. Never know, right? You have horrible taste in men or women. Well, maybe not. Maybe you saw something in that person that you felt needed more attention. And on paper, they may not have been a perfect match, but you went for it anyway. It didn't work out, but you're learning and you're growing, and you'll take away valuable lessons from these experiences and continue to explore what is best for you. You aren't smart enough. For what? Maybe those topics aren't important to you, and as a result, you haven't invested a lot of time investigating and learning. But where you are passionate and interested, you dig in deep and you focus all your energy in learning more about those topics. You're not worldly enough. For whom? Maybe you enjoy creating a haven at home and channeling your energy building a worldly retreat in your own backyard. You have a strong sense of community, and travel means getting out and participating, getting to know your neighbors, volunteering, and enjoying your own paradise. You've made too many bad choices. Maybe you've been in a rush to make something amazing happen in your life, and as a result, you didn't listen to your own intuition or let your heart guide you. Instead, you powered through with the knowledge you had at the time. When it didn't go your way, you recognized the defeat and you learned from the experience so you could create a different outcome next time. You're selfish. Well, maybe you value your time and you choose to surround yourself with things or experiences or people that make you happy. Maybe you're unsure how to pitch in and help others and you lack the confidence to ask. Maybe, just maybe, you can turn a negative into a positive. So challenge these beliefs because they're preventing you from having the confidence to trust yourself. So first, write them down. Say them out loud. Does that sound right? Is that really you? Try and think back to the root of this belief. Who said it? What was the circumstances in which it came up? Reframe this idea. What could be the positive outcome of this type of belief or behavior? And then last, prove it wrong. Step outside of this perceived comfort zone and right this wrong. If you were one of the lucky children that constantly heard, "The world is your oyster and you can do anything you set your mind to," you probably carried those beliefs into adulthood. If others regularly told you that you will never amount to anything and that you're worthless, what kind of foundation do you think that provided? A shaky one. And from shaky foundations come insecurity and a wavering sense of self. Not trusting yourself means you rely on others for direction, advice, and validation. Others who most likely don't know the real you, and as a result, can't possibly know what's best for you. So the advice is what's worked for them or what's best for them. Guess what? That's not you. Whose life are you living if this is your source of direction? No one knows the real you but you. Sometimes it's true. We don't know ourselves, and that's because we've lost ourselves. Right? Or maybe we never even really knew ourselves to begin with. Could that be you? Have you never really tapped into that? Been so concerned about other people that you forgot to do your own self-exploration? Well, Dr. Peggy O'Connor, acclaimed author and professor of philosophy, says this: trust is an Aristotelian virtue. It is a mean between the two extremes of excess and deficiency. Having too much trust makes you gullible. The gullible person is the one who will believe anything just because someone says it. the gullible person trusts far beyond what is justified and prudent. The person who has deficiency of trust is paranoid, in the sense of not accepting anything that anyone claims. There are never any good enough reasons to trust. All the evidence in the world would still be insufficient to warrant trust. Where are you on that scale? Trustworthiness is an abiding character state. A trustworthy person is someone who is reliable, consistent, and truthful in their actions across the board. It isn't that this person is perfect. Rather, their actions tend to spring from and reinforce their moral values and commitments. Well, we're going to complicate the matter even more, because it's the belief that each person knows herself better than others can know her. In philosophy, we call this privileged access. On this view, each person has an access to their own beliefs, desires, and thoughts, and emotions that no one else can have. Each of us can turn a light to even the darkest, most remote corners of our mind. No one else can see those corners and what lurks there. On that basis of privileged access, each person can say, I have the best perspective on who I am. However, the relationship between privileged access and perspective is muddy and confounds the question of how much trust we have in ourselves. Does each of us actually have enough distance to have perspective? Even with the best light, I may not be able to see myself clearly enough because I'm just too close. I cannot read a printed page held too close to my face, right? I don't know if you guys use readers or not, but there is a point where not even too close or far away helps. What is the equivalent of an arm stretch for seeing my actions and my character? How far away do we need to get to truly get a perspective of who we are? So only we can see into the deepest corners of our mind. If that's true, then we should know ourselves better than anybody. Why haven't we examined those areas of our mind? Well, Aristotle has some suggestions. If we become who we are by what we do, we should act in different ways if we want to become different people, right? He instructs us to act as virtuous, good people. Act as a virtuous good person. Act as a virtuous good person does even if we do not yet have that character, but just do it. So he actually came up with fake it until you make it. Of course, he didn't say it that way, but by mimicking, we can begin to act in the ways that can become virtuous as we begin to develop our virtuous character, right? So dress for the job that you want, not the job that you have. You can do that in life anyway. Be virtuous. Be a good person. Just start acting that way, and soon the rest of you will carry through as well. You know, in Erik Erikson's stages of psychosocial development, these are really interesting stages. I bet you're not aware of these. I'm going to read them to you. There are seven stages. One is trust versus mistrust. This is the basic virtue is hope. So the psychosocial crisis is trust versus mistrust, and the basic virtue is hope. And this happens anywhere between the ages of 0 and 1.5. The second one is autonomy versus shame, and the virtue is will. And that's between 1.5 years to 3. The third one is initiative versus guilt, and the virtue is purpose, and that happens between ages 3 and 5. You didn't know all this happened at such a young age. Number four is industry versus inferiority, and that is the basic virtue is competency. That's ages 5 to 12. And the fifth one is identity versus role confusion. and the virtue is fidelity, and that happens between the ages of 12 and 18. Are you waiting for your age bracket? 6 is intimacy versus isolation, and the virtue is love, and that's 18 to 40. Big, big grouping there. Number 7 is generativity versus stagnation. Stagnation. And the basic virtue is care. That's ages 40 to 65. And 8, sorry, there was 8 stages, is ego, integrity versus despair. And the virtue is wisdom. That's 65 and up. So what do these stages mean? Well, we are going to take a break. And then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about these stages and what's important about some of these stages. And I won't go into all of them for time safety, but I definitely encourage you to look those up. Erickson maintained that personality develops in a predetermined order through 8 stages of psychosocial development from infancy all the way to adulthood. During each stage, the person experiences a psychosocial crisis, which could have a positive or a negative outcome on personality development. According to the theory, successful completion of each stage results in a healthy personality and the acquisition of basic virtues. Basic virtues are characteristics or strengths which the ego can use to resolve subsequent crises. So we need these. Failure to successfully complete a stage, now this is the theory, can result in a reduced ability to complete further stages and therefore a more unhealthy personality and sense of self. These stages, however, can be resolved successfully at a later time. So kind of like the stages of grief, going through each one of them, you know, we must go through these stages as far as Erik Erikson is concerned. So I read those before we took the break, and I'm just going to revisit a few of those for you. So we talked about trust and mistrust. That's the very beginning one, hope. You know, basic virtue is hope. During this stage, and remember, that's 0 to 1.5. So this is early, early stages. During this stage, the infant is uncertain about the world in which they live and looks toward their primary caregiver for stability and consistency of care. If the care the infant receives is consistent, predictable, reliable, they will develop a sense of trust, which will carry with them to other relationships, and they'll be able to feel secure even when threatened. If these needs are not consistently met, mistrust, suspicion, and anxiety may develop. Right? We can see that. Let's visit another one. Initiative versus guilt. The basic virtue here is purpose. This is ages 3 to 5. During this period, the primary feature involves the child regularly interacting with other children at school. Central to this stage is play, as it provides children with the opportunity to explore their interpersonal skills with initiating activities. Children begin to play activities, make up games, initiate activities with others. If given this opportunity, children develop a sense of initiative and feel secure in their ability to lead others and make decisions. You can see how this all is relative to later in life. If this tendency is squelched, either through criticism or control, children develop a sense of guilt. The child will often overstep the mark in his forcefulness, and the danger is that the parents will tend to punish the child and restrict their initiative moving forward. Right? Can we see? Let's go a little bit older. Let's talk about, let's look all the way down to intimacy versus isolation. This is 18 to 40. This basic virtue is love. During this period, we begin to share ourselves more intimately with others. We explore relationships leading toward long-term commitments with someone other than a family member. Successful completion of this stage can result in happy relationships and a sense of commitment, safety, and care within a relationship. Avoiding intimacy, fearing commitment, and relationships can lead to isolation, loneliness, and sometimes depression. Success in this stage will lead to the virtue of love. Okay. And the very last one, wisdom. In this stage, it's during this stage that we contemplate our accomplishments and can develop integrity if we see ourselves as leading a successful life. Success in this stage will lead to the virtue of wisdom. Wisdom enables a person to look back on their life with a sense of closure and completeness, and also accept death without fear. If we see our lives as unproductive, feel guilt about our past, or feel that we did not accomplish our life goals, we become dissatisfied with life and develop despair, often leading to depression and hopelessness. The intuitive mind is a sacred gift, and the rational mind is a faithful servant. We have created a society that honors the servant and has forgotten the gift. That is a quote by Albert Einstein. I want to read that again. The intuitive mind is a sacred gift, and the rational mind is a faithful servant. We have created a society that honors the servant and has forgotten the gift. Isn't that so true? So what can you do? What can you do to develop this intuitive capacity? Tapping in, really being mindful. Well, when we were talking to Kristen, we talked about got to get to a certain age, right? So you can really look at all of your life experiences together. Well, maybe you're not at that age. So what can we do? We can't go all the way back on those stages and totally change our childhood and our foundation. We have learned through hopefully this show or some of the things that I've said tonight to challenge our limiting beliefs. We have learned that. When we do have sort of a rocky foundation because of other people's influences, we can challenge those things, push back, change, right the wrong, reframe the negative to the positive, right? We do have that ability. We are in control of those things. Well, here are 7 tips on how to develop your intuition and leverage it to make wiser, more soul-inspired decisions for your life. This is from Jack Canfield. And Jack is actually the creator of Chicken Soup for the Soul. And he's affectionately known as America's number one success coach. We all want to be successful, right? So recognize when your intuition speaks. How are you going to recognize that? Well, you got to be mindful, right? You've got to listen. Don't forget to listen. Deepen your intuition through meditation. Another way to listen. Really sit still. Be mindful. Be present. One of the best things about meditation is being present. You know, we get in such a rush in today's world. Go, go, go. We got to get here. We got to do this. We don't sit and just become present in where we are at that given moment. So meditation helps you do that. There's a lot of ways. I always thought meditation was, I have to be really quiet for a long time. And as I told you in this show, if you've been listening, I talk too much. So I have a hard time sitting still and being quiet. So you can do that also by just being present, noticing your body, you know, breathing through your heart, wiggling your fingers and toes. That's another way to stay present. Dedicate time to listen to your intuition each day. How much time do you spend quietly by yourself listening to yourself? How about writing that into your day? Then ask questions. Really ask questions. Brainstorm with yourself. Think about different solutions, different possibilities. Really listen for the answers. Write those down. Remember, you got to get that out of your head. Get it out, put it on paper, or tell someone else. If you're part of a group, this is a great way to do that. You can share your thoughts with others. And then take immediate action. You know, all too quickly, things come to us and we push it away. Not today. We procrastinate, right? This is the time to really take action and trust yourself. Developing a strong connection with your intuition can be challenging, especially if you spent a lifetime second-guessing yourself or not trusting your own decision-making skills, or if you have too many other voices in your head, like self-doubt, blame, or judgment. you could be drowning out your own intuition. Well, I challenge you. Challenge whatever's preventing you from listening and tuning into your inner voice. Realize you have a purpose and you deserve all life has to offer. Make yourself, your wants, your needs, and your desires a priority. You need to listen and trust yourself. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges. Summer through until the past was clear.